Merry Christmas! This gathering is for all you good boys and girls out there, and by good, of course, I mean those of you who are Civilization players. I'm Dashing Dan Q, and I'm joined by the lively Lisa.
I'm alive.
Savvy Scott.
Hello, everyone.
The passionate Phil.
I love the added alliterative appeal. That's good stuff.
And the magnificent Mackie.
We'll allow you this alliteration since it's Christmas.
Woohoo! And specifically on our guests, Imagine was unable to be here. And the last time Lisa was a guest on Polycast was just earlier this year in April when she was replacing Mad. So you could say that she is replacing Mad, which is humorous because Lisa was a regular co-host from 2010 to 2012, and Majin replaced Lisa. So I think it is impossible at this point for Majin and Lisa to appear at the same time. Are they the same person?
We will have a contest, Majin versus Lisa.
Mind blown. Mind blown. They're on to me.
Lisa's had a total of 3 guest appearances. And Lisa, do you remember your first guest appearance on the show?
How did I forget?
Do you remember what year it was?
Don't do it.
Reagan still president?
It was in 2009, on episode 75. Scott, man, you've been on the show as a guest 14 times.
Yes, and I plan to be on as many as possible. I'm really glad to have been on this many. It's been a lot of fun.
You were last on the show, episode 269, in December. And your first appearance was actually one episode before Lisa Scott, on episode 74 in 2009. So you even have guest seniority over Lisa. Good for you.
Uh-oh.
Scott has also been a Turncast regular player since 2013, and Mackie and I are also regular Turncast players. Phil is a past regular player on Turncast. And Scott's also a regular co-host on Modcast, has been since 2014, and he was also one of the 2 original co-hosts on Civcast. So you may be wondering, how come Lisa and Scott are here? Typically on a Christmas special, typically it is just the 4 regular co-hosts at the time, but part of it is because Imagine couldn't be here, but part of it was also I was thinking, you know, this is the 10th year for Polycast, and there wouldn't be Modcast, Turncast, Civcast, or also Revcast without Polycast, so it seemed fitting that we had some representation from Polycast past, Lisa.
Oh, Polycast. Ghost of Polycast past.
And no one wants to talk about the Ghost of Polycast future, other than there is one, assumingly. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, there is.
Alive and dead.
We're still pushing that 40-year anniversary, so.
That'll take a while.
Yeah,
what? We'll probably still be around, because we like to.
And before we get to our first topic, last but not least, I want to acknowledge thanks to those who are following Polycast on Twitter. We are over 200 followers for more than 400 YouTube subscribers. Thanks to our 8 patrons on Patreon. And a brief look at data. You know, I'm going to be talking about more of this in January,
first episode back.
Of course.
Of course. So specifically to thepolycast.net. Valid reason to actually mention the actual show's address on the show itself. Over the 11 months, January to November, we averaged 14,200 visitors a month and 395 gigabytes of data. Either we have lots of listeners, or we have a few listeners that like to listen to the episode so much that they get so excited that they listen to it and they delete it, and then they have to download it again on all of their devices multiple times.
I think you're allowed to be optimistic on this and that you have a good amount of listeners, Dan.
Yeah.
Woohoo!
I actually ran into somebody that remembered me from Polycast. But it was
just
a random
life?
Person. They're like, are you Lisa? Yeah.
What?
Wow.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right, never had that happen.
Me neither. Do tell, Lisa.
Yeah, I mentioned to somebody that I did Polycast, and they're like, oh, some other person that actually listened to Polycast was like, whoa, I listened to that. Is she Lisa? And I'm like, this is weird.
All right, celebrity status.
Kind of scary. Right.
So, Lisa, did this person take a selfie with you? And if so, did they?
No, but yeah, I feel insulted now that he didn't. Yeah. Apparently, I'm still on the D-word.
I wasn't sure if you'd be comfortable with that. And here you wanted one. Okay, fair enough.
No. Well,
well, now I feel like I.
Thanks, Dan. Oh, well, you're welcome. I just had this great memory, and now look what I've done. Wow.
Yep.
Thank you.
A user called Footslogger says, have the devs forgotten that a competent AI is at the heart of a strategy game? Discuss.
Well, I guess we're going to get the low blow out of the way early, huh?
Why do you said competent AI is not as easy as it sounds?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Preach. Yes.
I have chewed out the developers on Civ 6 about the UI on the forums quite viciously because it is awful in Civ 6, but AI is not so easy, especially with one unit per tile calculating pathing, computationally expensive pretty quickly, and it's not so easy to define general rules on how to react to something that a human couldn't recognize and essentially plan against and get them to throw away all their units constantly. So it's not that easy to make a strong tactical AI. You can make some improvements in how it pursues victory conditions. Those kinds of things can be canned to some degree and be more effective than it is now. But it's not that easy, to put it mildly, which is why it's not good in any strategy game, really, unless you give it huge bonuses.
I guess we would have to look at the definition of competent AI, but is there any game out there that has good AI? Because I don't know if I've ever heard of good AI in any game.
If you make the game simple enough or able to store like enough rote memorized situations to react, it can become really strong. Like the top level chess AIs can just massacre people.
Yeah, like Deep Blue or whatever that thing was called.
Yeah, but there's much less variability in the game state for that. So, like, you have something simple, or something like tic-tac-toe. You can program an AI to make tic-tac-toe unwinnable. You just tie every time. I mean, but it wouldn't be too difficult relative to other things. But in turn-based strategy, at least in my experience, I have yet to see one that's particularly strong, absent egregious bonuses.
Yeah, I mean, the complicated nature of Civ makes it so that it's difficult to create a good AI for it. I mean, if it were a game in which there's a determined number of steps leading to the last one, like tic-tac-toe, then it'd be one thing. But I mean, part of what makes this fun to play is that it's complicated and that we're better at it than computers, right?
Most of the time, but even some of us humans get confused by the Civ 6 rules and stuff like that, and, you know, how best to optimize our play in it. And we're humans with all this thinking power. Trying to get an AI in the game to do that, you would need so much memory and stuff. I don't know that you would have a game that would be easily playable.
And that's something I've seen mentioned by not Firaxis developers, but other developers who work on AI. They point out that you can have the AI do more computations brute force, but the more...
How do you like your in-between turn waves?
Yeah, and like the amount of time you use up to gain playability is not linear. You can increase the turn time by like 20 seconds and not have the AI become like double as good
better.
Or something. Yeah. So it comes to a point where it's not worth it to anybody eventually.
Is the turn time more due to the rendering of graphics that aren't on the screen?
There is some of that, yes.
Yeah.
Chromangus was benchmarking some of that and discovered that they're doing off-screen animations, and you can't turn animations off like you could in Civ 5, so that's part of the problem. Part of it's just pathing for a sheer number of Civs, city-states and Civs alike. Calculating paths there can be problematic. Civ 6 is significantly better with that than 5, as far as I can tell, but it's still an issue. It's just not as big a one. But that's performance stuff, not AI quality.
I mean, I know if you were playing Civ 2, it would just fly. I mean, I haven't played Civ 2 in a long time. The last computer I played it on, it moved very quickly. I just find it really hard to believe that it's harder for them somehow to get this to move fast when older games and older scripts moved just fine. I just, you know.
Well, don't forget, Civ 2 and anything prior to Civ 5 had the benefit of stacking. So the AI could have a logic for which it could use to stack units onto one tile and then logic to move that stack as a whole instead of having to compute each unit's movement individually.
I do remember in Civ 2 seeing them move the units individually, like they would have a stack and then suddenly they would spread out, you know, especially if they were barbs and they suddenly spawned and there'd be a whole bunch that would just come out of one little stack and go all over the place. But I didn't know if it was more of an animation thing because, you know, now it's 3D and they have higher demand on processing power too.
That kind of power would go more to the graphics card, but it processing what it wants to do has to go through the CPU. And that's sometimes where you can bottleneck it some, because it has to. The CPU is maintaining the game functions and having to have the AI think. There's only so much it can do with what it's got. You know,
now, there are some design choices that influence this. How do I put this? the nature of the game is such that AI can't really process its turn simultaneously, and thus it's harder for it to use multiple cores than if the game were designed in a way that it could do that, just as an example. And optimization has never really been in Firaxis's consideration when it comes to making these things, as far as I can tell. I've never seen it. Never seen evidence that they're putting any serious priority on that.
They're just happy when it works, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard to build a decent AI in Civ because you're comparing it to a human player. Not that in chess you're not comparing it to another human player also, but...
It's a simpler system. There's just less things to consider and less variability on the game board. Although the number is huge, the number of potential states you can see on chess is a much lower fixed number than in Civ, and that makes a difference, especially because a large proportion of those potential game states are situations where the game is functionally over or are so unlikely that you wouldn't see them, and if you did see them, then there would be one obvious winner already. It's apples to oranges, chess and Civ, in that regard.
My answer to Footslogger would be no. The developers, Firaxis Games, have not forgotten that a competent AI is at the heart of a strategy game. I would like to have seen the question phrased as, are the developers continuing to struggle to have a competent AI at the heart of this strategy game? And the answer to this is yes. What is my evidence that they haven't forgotten that a competent AI is at the heart of a strategy game? One patch that we have already seen for Civilization VI, in addition to the number of patches and as well as expansion packs from, say, Civilization V and before. It seems to be the pattern, talk about Civilization IV and Civilization V, and maybe now in Civilization VI, the game is released, the game has been tested, but with a relatively small group of people as compared to the number of people who are going to be playing the game. And then we, as Civilization fans, provide that feedback to Firaxis and Publisher 2K. They then have to decide what the priorities are in the short term and the longer term, look to address those issues, and then at the same time, you address this one particular issue. For example, the one thing that AI doesn't need to touch in terms of how well it's doing, and we've talked about this before, the religious units. We as human players, because it's new with the religious combat, are maybe struggling a little bit with that. But say the AI and escorting particular units that can be sniped, that has been an issue. So when you address one issue, how is it impacting on other issues, which goes back to part of everyone else's point at the heart of Phil's argument in a way, in that the more complicated the game, the more possible choices there are for the human, the more possible choices there are for the AI. And then to Mackie's point, one thing to be able to program the AI to actually do what it is to need to be competent, but then also how long is it going to take for the AI to process those turns, particularly as the game goes on and we as human players are taking a little longer to make those decisions. Feels especially rushed sometimes in multiplayer. It's like, hey guys, the turn timer's counting down. I know. And then trying to have it so that the AI is making those decisions, but also not having air quotes and incredible in-between turn times that make it frustrating then for the human player to want to play the game. I am not trying to rationalize where the AI is here at Civilization VI upon release. I'm just saying that when you ask if someone has forgotten such a thing, it's not a discussion point. The question is, are they struggling? Yes. Are they going to be able to make it competent? I don't know the answer. Who knows the answer to that question? Firaxis and 2K want to see it improve because they are continuing to support the game. Aspire, the people who are doing the port for the Mac, already made reference to a 60-day patch coming out, so there's still more to come. Fingers crossed.
Yep.
We'll see.
Just to sum up what has been said in the chat about it from the buzzing, pretend to be an AI programmer, write a set of instructions to play Civ, give your list to someone who's never seen Civ, and blindly follows your list. Well.
Yeah. That's pretty fair, though. Like, that's basically what it's like, yes.
So said this, there are also balance issues entwined with it, which you said a little later on as part of our discussion. Balance. Yeah.
Oh, boy. Something that may work good in a single-player game to balance the AI may totally mess up a multiplayer game.
Oh, plus you run afoul of balance considerations in general. It's not that easy to do. Like, the Civs are not balanced. They are not even close to balanced.
They never are in Civ.
Major disparity, and that is by design. So...
Well, yes, that, in part that goes towards the particular AI. Does it have any personality other than we've said the color palette is different? And at different points in the game as well, because some civilizations, this is the period that they can really shine with their unique unit. For instance, And then this civilization is later or before. And if it wasn't that way, and if it was just, again, color palette and or different graphics otherwise on units, do we want it to be balanced? But then also, what is the definition of balance? And to me, the balance comes to choices. You don't want it to be able to say that the strategy for this game is to choose this civilization over all others, full stop, because of X, Y, and Z. Or you always want to take this action. You always want to build this first. You always want to research this first. You always want to do X first because, on balance, it's almost better or it's almost always better, or the risk-to-reward ratio is so high with this choice as compared to the others, it's really not a meaningful choice. To me, that's where the balance comes in, as opposed to they're all equal in terms of their weighting throughout a particular game of Civ.
Yeah, and definitely Civ 6 could use some help on the always do this front, as could Civ 5. I like that the developer stated it as a goal, that they would try to avoid that in Civ 6. They're not there yet, but it's encouraging to see that as a stated intention, and hopefully they manage. It's not easy. It's not easy at all.
The one time that we've seen in the Civilization franchise where it was, let's try to have every AI be ridiculously overpowered slash not balanced as compared to everything else, would be Civilization Revolution on the console, which I know is a whole separate argument, but it's kind of like, well, what if they tried to do it this way? Like, I think we go from one extreme to the other, where Civilization Revolution was an extreme in one respect, whereas, say, earlier PC Civ titles were an extreme in another respect, where, again, the difference was the color palette and the leader name and the leader art. It was nice to look at that it was different, but it really didn't feel different in any way.
John C. Nunn, he lists a couple of topics, but one of the ones that I like is speculation about the timing content of the first four DLC. I guess, you know, when can we expect them to come out and what will be in them?
Well, I'll start off by saying that given how we already have a second leader for Greece, I think it's fair to say that some of the DLC, I don't know if it's going to be part of the four necessarily, but at some point we're going to see leaders for another civilization because they've already set that up. I mean, can you imagine Civilization VI being complete and that's the only one?
I doubt it.
Yeah. Haven't we seen some Steve achievements popping up already related to some of this stuff?
Yes, we're getting some, like, generic descriptions. Like, we saw in Civilization 5, too, right before certain things were released, where it was like, hey, did anyone notice about DLC underscore achievement 53? Oh, man, that sounds so awesome. I mean, I don't have any idea what it is, but...
Yeah, well, it suggests that there's probably going to be DLC soon.
Unless all they're doing is, of course, adding more achievements to the
video. Yeah, just adding a whole bunch of achievements. Just, you know, kind of...
The DLC.
Kind of near the holiday season. We're just going to add a whole bunch of achievements. Nothing else, guys. I mean, yeah.
Yay,
it's possible
I achieved
in
something.
Principle. Yeah, I mean, it could happen. It's not terribly likely that they're doing that, but, I mean, I guess.
Hiding it for the DLC.
And, yeah, they'll hide the achievements. Just because.
We have the trailer that showed Poland, so that's... possibly a DLC Civ right there.
Yeah.
Well, is Korea in Civ 6? It is in Civ 6, isn't it? Along with Guam and Hawaii? No? Trinidad? No?
Canada? Australia?
Guam.
Not yet, anyway.
Hmm.
We've had Korea in 5 for sure. I'm trying to remember. Did
well,
we have
Korea
it in 4?
Yeah. Korea was in Civ 4, wasn't it?
Yeah, we had them in Civ 4.
Korea's almost always a DLC.
Yeah. They might have been a DLC.
Oh,
no, they were an expansion pack.
They're an expansion pack. Yeah,
they're always an expansion pack.
It also goes back to the question as well, which was, you know, what is about the time and the content of the first four DLC? The ones included in Deluxe, yes, because we know that there is DLC coming for certain, because when you buy the Deluxe version of the game, then it's going to include those first four DLC. So as soon as those are released, you just get them. You log into Steam, you start downloading them, you don't have to pay above and beyond what you've already paid for the game. If you look at the timing, when Civilization V was released, there was actually Day Zero DLC in the form of the Mongolian Civilization, which was free. And then the next DLC was Babylon that came out in October, just a month later. Yeah, and then you had the Mediterranean Cradle of Civilization pack the month after that. In the end, including expansion packs, there were 10 pieces of DLC. which, as I've said before, an expansion pack is downloadable content, but of course it's considerably more than the others. But you had 10 pieces of DLC over 3 years. So
yeah, it's not like that.
Well, it's a good benchmark of comparison because it's immediate history of Civ. At the same time, the game has been out for, almost that being Civilization VI, pushing almost 2 months now, and there has been no DLC, whereas there was already DLC for Civilization V. It's good in the sense that they're not just copying the template for Civilization V, in terms of timing anyway, but in terms of what they're actually going to include, again, beyond additional leaders, which I think, again, is reasonable for reasons already cited, I have no idea what they're planning.
Yeah, I feel like the way that they introduced DLCs in Civ 5 was mostly to get people into the habit with, like, the first one being free. But now the DLCs have kind of taken over, you know, despite my protestations. They didn't listen to Lisa Bang. I do not...
I do not listen to Lisa... Oh, is there a t-shirt for that? Oh, no, wait, sorry, kidding.
We can make a t-shirt.
Yeah, I need 50% of the profits, at least.
I haven't listened to a single complaint.
In the chat, the buzzing. My first, I guess, is the first DLC will be art asset heavy, since the art team won't be able to do much once they sent the game for rating, while others will be bug fixing and optimizing. Okay, let me just say right up front, let's not have fixing bugs being part of DLC. Let's not cross that. Hey, sorry, there's a bug in the game. If you get this DLC, we fix it for you. Pardon? No.
Yeah, that's
not having screens in the game is actually a bug that needs to be fixed via DLC.
And let's not buy into the disingenuous notion that the DLCs will pay for bug fixes, because that doesn't actually happen.
Oh, yes, there you go. You guys enjoyed the first patch, right? Yeah, that was free. Next ones are. Buy our DLC, then we'll make more. Yeah. No.
No.
And, of course, in the meantime, if there's something particularly frustrating you about Civilization VI, like, go talk to a modder. Right, Scott? You're a modcast. That's how things work, right? That's how things get done in the modding community, right?
Yeah, I'm sure they're looking forward to making multiple leaders, you know, having that ability. And so it'll be interesting to see what leaders will show up in DLC and what leaders will show up from the modding community.
Oh, we talked a fair bit about the content here. Again, about the timing, I already kind of touched on it a little bit. I don't know. I mean, it's, December the 10th? Timing, 2017. Yeah, 2017 looks like a fair prediction for DLC, I would say. Yeah.
I was hoping January would be the first DLC, at least.
If it's something small and not like a major thing, then maybe. Then anything big would probably, I don't know, spring or summer.
In North America.
Yes.
Before
the Northern America. The company is in North America, okay? I can refer to it that way.
Okay, you have the similar seasons in Europe and the Northern Hemisphere and Asia. It happens.
Yeah, I know, because January is when everybody will be able to play Matsuma, you know.
Oh, yeah.
That period will be up, so that's why I thought maybe that would be a good time to have the DLCs come out.
There's your Day 90 DLC. The Aztecs, lol.
You may not play them.
I just like that I got that pre-order bonus by ordering the game like 2 minutes before release time. Good.
Oh, the buzzing follows up. I didn't mean the DLC will be about bug fixes and optimizations. I mean that the teams working with code have less time to work on the first DLC because they'll be working on patches and optimization. Well, we have no idea how the breakdown of the team is at Firaxis. Plus, I know this is kind of hard to remember sometimes as a Civ player, but there's this other franchise that Firaxis is also heavily involved in, something called XCOM. I don't know, you might have heard of it. So I have no idea what the division of labor is there, plus anything else that might be going on there. But it is true, they would have to balance that in terms of who's working on DLC and when and to what extent. Thanks, Lisa. Thanks for joining us.
Morning Columns post. How likely is it that you have an alliance / friendship that lasts an entire Civ game with an AI leader? He has 3 questions total. Second question is, do you think it is a problem that AI all end up hating each other? And third question is, what is your favorite music track in Civ 6? And I will start with the third one, because I don't know that I have a favorite yet. Civ 6's music is pretty good, through and through. I feel like they, as they often have in previous Civilizations, they put some attention there, and it shows the music is good. Man, I don't know. They picked the music for the Civs pretty well. I was really impressed when I started hearing Scarborough Fair with England, for example. So I don't know what I would pick there, but I would like to say that I really enjoy the music in the game so far.
Did you like the Atomic Age Japan because of how it actually sounds a little futuristic at the same time, and it's really cool to hear the classic instruments mold into that?
On the Alliance Friendship thing, it is actually possible for the human player to manipulate the AI so that it never declares, similar to previous Civilization titles. It's a little opaque how to do it, but it's there. I've seen screenshots of people running 5 alliances with 5 other civilizations in the game, and they're just literally allied to every single one of them. It does depend on agenda and whatnot, but that's possible. On a typical game for me, it's virtually impossible that'll happen because the Warmonger heat scaling is senseless right now. But so if you do any conquest, the answer is that it's not going to happen very much. You might be able to keep an ally or two while conquering for a bit, but that's it. Otherwise, if you don't expand at all through war, you have a decent chance of keeping an AI ally the entire time if you work the system. As for AI hating each other at the end, I think it depends. I think that AIs that are not in a position to win need to band with other AIs that are also not in a position to win to try to. I would like to see a little bit more cooperation in that regard, and I would like to see a little bit more cooperation between AIs whose agendas do not immediately conflict, especially if there's a runaway civ that each of them don't like. Right now, the game is a little bit too much. Everybody hates everybody, and that really does cut into the planning that you got from, say, Civ 4 diplomacy. You could align yourself with 1 to 2 other civilizations, and then very often you would make choices that were contingent on maintaining that relationship with those other AIs at least as long as you needed it. And so you had way more consideration of the ramifications of your actions on diplomacy in the previous games. I would like to see that come back. I think it can be done within the framework of Civ 6 mechanics, but they're not there right now.
I would love that to come back in, because I know Civ 4 had permanent alliances. I don't know how likely they'll put that in, but it's something that I would like. I enjoyed having that ability to really actually forge an alliance with an AI and not forge a temporary, well, I won't kill you yet, you know, and then later on I end up killing them because, the other question says, end up hating me because reasons. In the most recent game I was playing on a continent with me, I had Spain and America, and I don't know why, but for some reason suddenly America just attacks me, and I have no idea why they do. I settled some cities, but they never gave me any warning. There was nothing. There was just one day they wanted to attack me. And so I ended up conquering them. And of course that makes Spain hate me because now I've taken out America, so I have to take out Spain. It just feels like there should be.
And then everyone
more,
hates you.
just a way to manage it so that way you can say, really have an effect on the AI and really make a deal where you're not going to go to war with them, you know, and actually be able to have them last the whole entire game without killing them because they've just decided to attack you and hate you for no reason. It's very frustrating. So, yeah, I would like more stable alliances.
It's interesting that you referenced the permanent alliance system that was possible in Civilization IV. I absolutely love it in terms of the multiplayer context, particularly cooperative multiplayer, so we can, quote-unquote, formally end a game. At the same time, I and this goes back to the competent AI question. Not that it was so much of an issue in Civilization IV, if it ever was an issue in Civilization IV, not that I can recall. But if you have a permanent alliance system, to me it comes down to a question of who's going to ally with who and when and what's the purpose, because permanent is indeed permanent. I would be very hesitant, actually, to enter a permanent alliance with an AI, but just an alliance or friendship in general, I think it very much depends on also what victory condition you are going for. I don't think it is likely that you're going to have an alliance that would last an entire game, or a friendship that would last an entire game, but at the same time, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I think that would be more likely to not happen than to in fact happen, and I don't think you would more often than not want that to happen for an entire game. While your decisions and what you are going for might change, there's also their actions and their relationships with other AI influencing your standing with other AI. So I guess to that, and do you think it's a problem that the AI ends up hating each other all of the time? Yes, that is a problem if the AI ends up hating each other all of the time. I haven't seen all of the AI hating each other. I've seen all the AI hating me, but I think that's because they know I'm a human player. And as for favorite track, other than the opening theme, I really haven't listened to a lot of the music in the game past the first week or two. As enjoyable as it is, it's nothing against that. I just like listening to podcasts while I'm playing Civ. Not necessarily my own, but of course that's included in there from time to time. So I've got to give the nod in terms of favorite music track to the Civilization VI opening theme, which of course came to us from Christopher Tin, who did the opening theme for Civilization IV. And as I said before, and I'll say again, I look forward to Christopher Tin coming back and scoring the theme for Civilization VIII. Only even numbers, man. Only even numbers.
I actually would like to see AI fight each other to finishing one of each other off again. That would actually be nice, because as it is, they fight for a little bit, maybe take a city, and then just stop, and then they're fine.
I think it also kind of goes to what the agenda of the civilization is. Perhaps when they go and they attack and they declare war and they take a city and or they just start pillaging things, or they go after a city-state, for example, that someone is the suzerain of and they just want to deny them of it and they stop, maybe that is part of their agenda. Maybe that also goes towards what you were saying, Scott, in your recent game where you had America and Spain on your continent and America attacked you out of nowhere. I mean, yes, they do have the historical agenda of liking people with a city on their home continent, but they also dislike people who go to war on their home continent and go after city-states. But sometimes it could just be something that you didn't do or didn't say. And it also goes to your access level as well. I think that's one thing that even I occasionally have to remember. It's like, I don't have this information. Why don't I have this information? Oh, right, I haven't reached a sufficient access level. But part of the access level difficulty, we talked about it before, was just trying to get that first embassy, which was, oh, for whatever reason, they don't like you, right? The first impressions of you modifier can, of course, be all the difference they need where everything else is being neutral, that within a turn or two of meeting them, they dislike you. They will not accept an embassy from you, although they might be perfectly fine asking you for an embassy. Then you have to remember, oh, I got to do that. And I know there's been the patch. Braxis said they addressed that. I'm still seeing it too far often than not. So, yes, getting to that access level is difficult. All of us as players paying more attention to that access level, remembering to get that, and then remembering to check on that when something happens, or even if you're thinking about doing something yourself to try to get a sense of what's going on, what I would actually like to see is for me to be able to figure out a little more easily. I mean, I can see the relationships between AI through the diplomacy interface. I can see, for example, you know, if they're at war, if they're friendly. I like to be able to get in deep and actually look at, so what is the positive and negative modifier, say, between Spain and America? Which we used to be able to get into some with the espionage system in Civilization IV. So you could figure information like that out.
You didn't need it, though. You could do it without espionage, which was questionable in Civ IV, but you could do it.
And that would be helpful. And clearly the game is tracking it, must be tracking it, ought to be tracking it, because the AI seems to be making decisions based on that. So just have it be part of the user interface. And tying into espionage makes complete sense. The buzzing in the chat. I feel like there's a lot of stuff that are diplomatic penalties I have no real control over. Yeah, I mean, the first impressions of you, that's a hard one. It's usually negative, I find. You realize it might only be like -2 or -3. But in that early game, particularly, that's a snowball effect.
Well, right? Yeah, it's rough to get that extra 1 or 2 back after they've already said they kind of hate you. And I did see somebody wishing we had that screen back from Civ IV, the diplomacy screen, where you could, like, click on whoever it was and you could see their relationships via, you know, not with an actual number, but a color code.
Oh, yeah, it's a little web.
Line.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That would be great to have back.
There are a lot of UI conventions that Civ IV did that never should have left the series. That is a good example. The city screen, the one that lets you see all the yields of all your cities and what all of them are building, would be tremendous, especially now when you are once again expected to have more than just a couple cities. Having that around would be an amazing benefit to micromanagement in the game, because back then you could use that to change your city's builds based on the information that it was giving you. And so you could manage very large empires from that screen alone, including giving orders to multiple cities if you wanted, and really cut down on the time needed while also making reasonably informed choices about what's going on. And the trade screen that would look like that would be similarly useful. They really should bring this back. It's not rocket science. Turn-based strategy games of decades past have managed to do this well. It does frustrate me that Civ 6 does not.
I like Cool Lizzie's two questions here. I mean, one's a fun question, the other one's a more serious question. The fun one was, well, stated that Civilization VI has some glaring flaws, but looking past those, what new mechanics, improvements, and changes in the game have you been most pleasantly surprised by? You know, I like the districts. I like the whole idea of you having it all out where you can see it, because very often when we were trying to, in Civ 4 and 5, specialize the city, like you wanted one city to go science or one city to go production, and there was no visual cue to you unless you sat there and, like, renamed the city something odd. So now I've got the districts as kind of that cue. I hadn't expected that side effect of them, and I like sticking all the buildings into the districts and you can keep track of, what was I doing here? Oh, right, I need to build that thing.
And it's still very much tied to geography for the districts, especially if you get into the adjacency mm-hmm. bonuses and also questions of where can you place a district in the first place. Hey, guys, I can't place my harbor on the grassland. Why is that? Okay, that's an extreme, obviously, example of why you can't be able to do that.
Duh. It needs to be in the water.
I don't know. Maybe there's a mod out there that will do that, does mm-hmm. do that, is in development. Who the heck knows? There's lots of craziness out there.
I remember we did have someone in Turncast that was having trouble placing a harbor because he hadn't bought an ocean tile, and he was trying to put it on the plains because he thought it would, like, I guess, automatically go into the ocean or whatever, but he was trying to put it on the plains and didn't realize yet that they have an ocean tile, not just a plains tile.
To be fair, you could do that either way, because when you build a harbor in a city, the majority of the buildings and infrastructure happens to be on the land, so you could associate the coastal tile with where you would build the harbor. Like, yeah. You can pick either one there. It's reasonable implementation either way. So if somebody assumed that it was in the water, I would not say they're crazy for for doing that.
I like the two trees that we have, not just the technology tree, but also the civics tree as well. It really helps rail against the, which was true in Civilization V, that science is king. It's not to say that science is not important in Civilization VI. Absolutely not. But in my play, it's making me think of more, not just about my science output, but it's also making me think about my culture output. And actually, I often think, oh, please let me find a culture city-state. Please let me find a culture city-state. In addition to a science one, but it's also making me think, oh yeah, I need to remember to construct this district. I should be really paying attention to adjacency bonuses for that purpose. What I particularly like about the civics tree is it's not just about getting to new policy choices that tie into your government choices. Right, because you get your government choices that are going through the civic tree, you've got the individual policies that are going through there, more similar to Civilization 4 in some respects, and then Civilization 5 in others. What I would like to see more is that if you want to be able to construct this building, maybe even some units in some particular considerations, you have to get the civic for it. It is not in the technology tree, which adds like another dimension of what am I choosing to research and when am I choosing to research it. I was pleasantly surprised by how that played out. When they initially announced there were the separate trees, I thought, oh, that's nice. But I was thinking more about we can mix and match with policies here and build it a little like more we had in Civilization 4, not anticipating how welcome it would be that the civic tree would be that deep in terms of my gameplay.
Yeah, and you can't do like people would do before and totally go science and ignore culture and expect to win because you're going to cripple yourself doing so.
There's also nothing like the heart skipping when you get a notification that so-and-so has advanced into two or three areas ahead of you, that notification on screen, and then, of course, you have to think, okay, did they do that from the technology tree, or was that from the civics tree? Either way, it also gives you kind of a, if you haven't been paying attention otherwise, gee, I'm kind of lacking in this area, and I think just from experience in previous Civ games, it's usually, wow, I'm keeping up in tech, but I'm not keeping up with the civics, as you were getting at, Mackie. And it's just kind of like, oh, right.
Yeah.
That's a thing, because then that gets them to be able to get new government types at some point more quickly, which allows them to be running more policies simultaneously, which feeds back into technology and production and gold output, et cetera, et cetera.
I feel like districts are perhaps a little too strong right now, but mechanically I like their concept. For, like, the civics thing, I do like the government cards, and I like how they interact with teching and how they interact with Eureka's and inspirations on both sides. Although that's not very well balanced right now, it adds the potential in the game for some pretty good stuff that you didn't have previously. Especially the whole, like Dan mentioned, the science cascade, science being king. Well, to an extent, you can still kind of run away with science by going down that path. But Eureka's make it a bit more palatable to choose a different tech path and gun the Eureka's for the bulk of your research instead of just focusing down research-giving structures all the time. The potential to have that in the game, even if it isn't well-tuned now, is welcome. Because it tells me that if you do tune these systems well, you have a lot of things that are potentially viable depending on situation. Between that and the strategy with the governments, I think there's a lot there that wasn't in previous titles.
I think the religious district might be a little on the weaker side, at least as far as... because all the buildings kind of gear towards making you more great people points, but after, like, the beginning of the game, you don't need those points anymore, so it's kind of a waste having these buildings that are going to keep giving you great people points for a great person that you can't earn anymore. It's a weird thing there. I'm not really sure what the answer is.
I counter you there a little bit, although I do agree that after you get your first great profit, you're still generating great profit points, but they're completely useless. You can't put them into anything else. That would be a nice change, but you still are going to want the faith output that goes with that if you are thinking about, for example, spreading your religion, right, number one. But there are also, depending upon your belief choices, being able to construct certain buildings, for example, that give you more science, they give you more food. And the big thing comes from the patronage, actually, which I think a lot of people ignore, that at a certain point, if you're trying to get that great person, another type of great person, say that great scientist, guess how much gold you would have to spend, because that's the other choice, gold or faith. Part of how much you're going to have to pay is how much you have already put into that particular great person. But if you realize, oh man, this person must have constructed another science building, and now they're on track to get that great scientist before me, and I know I want that great scientist, the game is telling me what the benefit of that great scientist is going to be, that I can spend, if I banked enough faith, to be able to get ahead of that person and instantly get that. Hopefully you're interested in the next great scientist, because that's what you're either going to get or you can pass on. So I don't think it's complete waste, but it would be nice if the great person points also contributed in some way. But seeing as how you can already use your faith output to, say, rush great people, what those great person points would then go towards, yeah, it's a question mark if you want to play around with it being some kind of added multiplier for faith output or something completely different, is definitely odd. Once again, the great people and the religious mechanic is kind of out there, kind of like it was in Civilization V, which was, hey, you've got enough faith accumulated for a great profit. When are you going to get it? Who knows? Whereas everything else was you were able to time it down to the measure that the game was telling you, no, you're going to get this the next number of turns, and you did. Also from John C. Nunn, a speculation on how soon Firaxis will close the loophole of one-turn production into a district and switch to something else to freeze its price. I agree it's a loophole, but right now, with the escalating cost of districts as the game goes on...
I would like to see it scaling adjusted on the next major patch. It should not be dependent on your technology. You can scale it on something else that is more reasonable, and then it won't be such a difference depending on when you build it either. Because that's really the problem there. It scales on something kind of nonsensical. The fact that you can tech up and have the same structure built in the same place by the same city, giving the same yield even potentially, costs more. It's strange. It's a strange design choice.
I would say it's maybe a penalty, but it's kind of saying, why are you taking so long to found this city? You should have done this sooner if you wanted it to be useful. If anything, you could make the argument that, in fact, it should be the other way. Because so many turns have gone on, there's only that many more turns until the end of the game, either formally or because you decide to stop playing, that it in fact should maybe not take as long in newer cities because you're not going to have as many turns to be able to have the output when the building output is an absolute value in particular. Now, I'm not saying that I would necessarily want it to go to that, but that would be a better extreme than what we have right now because there is no way to rush a district cost.
Yeah, the only thing you can do really is play as Aztec or use trade. And trade is a very commonly abused thing on the higher levels. If you read the forums, you'll see all the time people are putting the commercial hub as one of the top two districts in the game. And essentially they're using trade routes to get production going in newer cities.
There's that, and I said there's no other way to rush it. If you want an absolutely quick rush, in the late game, what I try to do is I try to look for a spot that I think not only is it going to be useful geography-wise, but I'm not particularly thinking about, say, having any kind of lumber mills, for example, because, oh, I really wanted to construct this commercial hub. Oh, good. There are some forests that will come into the hex, or I can go ahead and upon settling, if it's not within the first ring, I can buy it relatively quickly, get my builder out there, chop it, rush production on the district, and maybe then I'm not so concerned about, wow, you took the short-term pain for longer-term gain, but in that case, it's that much farther later in the game, so I'm really not going to benefit from the long-term gain. But at the same time, to say that I'm going to have to chop that, and or I'm going to have to get these internal trade routes when it's really not the best choice in terms of what it should be, but because of the way the mechanic has been implemented, I have to do it this way. Otherwise, what was the point of me settling that city in the first place? And then you might say, well, then maybe you should be asking yourself, why are you settling the city in the first place if that's what you're going to have to do? Well, sometimes, you know, I need oil, and it's the only place that I'm going to be able to get oil. I need a first source. I need a second source. There's no city-state. I can become the suzerain of and get it. Another AI, I'm concerned about being able to successfully take a city and then keep a city that's going to have access to it and not worry about being pillaged, et cetera, et cetera. So there are times where, yeah, I'm going to have to go and settle that city, and it would be nice to think that those cities could have some kind of reasonable output to contribute to your empire in the late game, get started a little sooner because it's never going to be able to catch up to your earlier city's potential because you're that much farther along in the game. But at the same time, not feel like the only reason I'm settling this is doing like an AI move, which is, hey, there's fish here and I don't have fish otherwise. Right now, it's just, really, I want that strategic resource, or I want to block this AI from moving in on my territory. It's in the later game. It's not going to be able to do anything except take up space. And quite frankly, founding a city should not just be about taking up space.
Dino was bringing up the point about the districts being limited by population as a, you know, maybe that should be like a good enough limit alone for a number of districts. And I do like that concept in the game where you have to have housing to increase your population and then tells you how many districts you can have.
And as John C. Nunn described about putting one-term production on a district switches something else to freeze its price, you could say at any point in time, potentially, that that will save you some time in the sense that it's not going to take you as much to complete it when you lock it in, except if you put one turn of production into it and then walk away. Yeah, you've locked in the price, but you haven't completed that district, let alone put anything inside that district. So you've lost those turns. But right now, because of the scaling cost through technology for the increase in price, it is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, it's just an incredible multiple that I find myself doing that and thinking, I know I'm not going to be able to get use out of this right now. It's not the district that I want to have right now, but I do want to lock that in. That is just, for not doing that is extreme for any kind of city that's mid to late game, and it shouldn't be. It's not so much just a loophole, I mean, I guess it is, but it's more of a reaction to the other situation that we've described with districts rather than, I'm going to give myself a discounted district. I think it should be a question of, yeah, you can go ahead and freeze its price, but you're not going to be able to get the benefit from that until you actually complete it, as opposed to what it is right now, which is you are, air quotes, crazy for not doing it. And you shouldn't have to realize it in a certain respect, but after a certain time of playing the game and getting burned by it, hopefully you do in fact recognize that. So if we got rid of the bigger issue, then I don't think anyone would be citing this as a real loophole.
Yeah.
Horizons, how rushed was statistics? Super rushed, hyper rushed, or uber rushed?
Well, Uber Markler isn't on the show, so I don't think he had anything.
No, so it's not uber rushed.
If Uber Markler would just say yes, but...
Past guest on the show and regular Turncast player, for those people listening, I'm sorry, who are you talking about again? How do you even begin to answer that question? In part, because what we expect Civilization VI to be upon release, given what we know, may be very different from what Firaxis and 2K have in mind. So I guess that kind of comes down to less about what we would hope, for example, district play would be, but what about kind of those issues that, oh, you guys really should have noticed that, like, I don't know, the whole disbanding units for gold thing. Like, those are the kind of things that make us kind of question about the rushing thing. All I'll say about that, there's actually a related thread kind of this on CFC where people are asking, yeah, do people actually test this game before they release? There are deadlines that have to be met, and when you're something with this many moving parts in terms of people and times, you've got resources, human and financial, and all the mechanics and all the art assets and all of the coding, trying to have that align in some way for something that is this substantial as Civ and the marketing machine, et cetera, I don't even know if Civ 6 was rushed. I have no idea how long they've been working on this game. And again,
I'm not as nice as you.
I know.
I don't think the game was rushed either, because I remember when the Beyond Earth spaceships came out and Sid Meier's obliquely referred to production of whatever games you think we should be working on. Trust me, we're working on them. I think that was him saying, we're working on Civ 6 now. You know, don't worry about it.
So I think...
I think it's had its normal game production time, which is, I guess, 2-3 years or something like that. So I think it's gotten a lot of attention, and it's had a lot of work on it done, so I don't feel like it's a rushed game.
There is something there. Was the game rushed, or was it mismanaged? There's a difference between the two. If your publisher moves up the release date, or is putting undue pressure on the developers, then you can say the game was rushed. If the game was given a time frame that both sides agreed to on the start, the developers represented that they would include these features, and then because the developer made promises that were unrealistic, they couldn't keep them, even with their agreed-upon release date, then I would not say it was fair to say the game was rushed, at least not by the publisher. So you have some project management issues there then. And the other thing to decide on is, what is an acceptable release date for the game? I probably have essay levels of writing on this in the thread. But my take on it is, for things like AI or how well balanced the game is, that kind of thing, it's more subjective. For things like performance, how well over the game runs, that sort of thing, I think it's pretty clearly inferior to where you would expect a AAA title to be, just because current turn-based strategies from 10 years ago, and not hyperbole, even 20 years or more ago, were better at some of these aspects than Civ 6 is. So at least from those standpoints, I feel like the game was not given enough attention. Part of that does go into a mixture of how quickly you make the release date, but also what features you look to include on release. You have some tough choices there from a project management standpoint. You have to decide, first of all, what you can realistically accomplish in the time frame, and then if you have to cut things out, you have to decide what's more important. And to me, deciding that something like adding religion to the game is more important than the user interface functioning in a competent fashion is not acceptable. However, a lot of the community does not agree with me. I feel like they're mistaken in that a lot of these complaints about the pacing of the game are actually related to that, but perhaps that's a better discussed at length another time.
We kind of end up acting as some of the playtesters, not on a purposeful thing from them, but when they're playtesting in-house, and even the group they have that does it, they're looking for certain specific things. When you get out into more general gameplay and people start trying new things, or people that have a fresh perspective on it trying things, this is where things come from, like the selling units for gold.
I would disagree, having done playtesting in the past. I feel QA is underestimated on average because they are not listened to.
Well,
as someone worded it,
as someone worded in the thread, a shippable issue. A lot of the stuff we see, a lot of the stuff people complained about are things that almost certainly, if the QA team is bigger than, like, just the people playtesting the beta is bigger than, like, two or three people, I would say it's virtually impossible that they did not notice it and mention it to the people programming the game. Almost impossible. Now, if you're talking about something esoteric, like, okay, you build a city on X location, and then while keeping one menu open, you open another menu and queue up, like, four things, even though queuing is impossible, and then you get infinite money, like, those kinds of things, okay, fine. You're not going to expect a relatively small beta testing team to find that, and you're not going to expect the developers to catch every issue like that. But when it comes to, like, selling units for heaps of money, I'm sure at least one person in testing noticed that you could do this and was able to use it to develop their Civ more quickly than you could otherwise by a wide margin. It's so unlikely that it didn't happen that I don't feel it's fair to say that the testing wasn't done. The developers / publisher or whatever just decided that it wasn't important enough of an issue to delay release for it, along with whatever other issues were in the game with the vanilla release. Civ 6 is certainly better than both 4 and 5, especially than 5, on release, because you have functional multiplayer, and the balance of those games, even Civ 4, was pretty rough on release. The Civ 5 was particularly egregiously bad in terms of what strategy could work every single time when it was shipped. So Civ 6 isn't unique there. I would like to see them in a better release date in that regard, but I'll give them a pass. It's not so big a deal. There aren't that many people as a percentage of the player base who can just destrolish the game on Deity. So, okay. I still think that if you advertise multiplayer, it should work. Civ 6 did that for the first time in Civ mainline history in a while.
Yay!
Play more than 10 minutes without desyncing on Civ 6 release, which is different from 4 and 5, where you basically didn't have multiplayer on release despite it being advertised. To me, that's not a shippable issue. That is a dishonest issue to ship the game with. And so it's nice to see that that didn't make it into Civ 6. Fix the user interface. Please stop making us do, like, 30-plus extra inputs more than necessary a turn. Please, please. That's my Christmas present I request. Give us the functional user interface. Maybe fix unit cycling, too, so it's actually an option.
Oh, well, an option that you would actually want, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, right now, you might as well just turn it off because it doesn't work. And yeah. The reason I say that is when you click on a unit, the game should select that unit, and it should not select a different unit after you click on that unit and then issue the orders to the second unit that you were giving orders to the first unit that you've actually selected.
Especially multiplayer on a turn timer. Oh, my God.
Yeah, but it's a problem in single player, too, because I don't want to spend time on turns on unnecessary things. So I don't want to click on a unit and then patiently wait until I'm sure the game really selected that unit, not another unit, before issuing an order. Like, it's not rocket science. Selecting a unit and moving the unit you selected is something that's been around in gaming a long, long time. It's not that hard.
Kind of already answered someone else's question. I thought of it particularly as you were describing the UI issue. From King Chris 20. Obviously, an improved AI is the top of everyone's list, but aside from that, what are the top three fixes that need to be taken care of ASAP? District scaling.
The user UI has to be there. It has to be there.
Yeah.
User interface, yeah. District scaling, and UI. You could argue between first and second. I guess, on balance, I'd probably say the UI interface is just a little bit ahead of district scaling, because you're always going to have a user interface in a game. You might not have a district scaling issue, because, hey, you win the game before then, or you quit before that becomes a particular issue. Third issue, for some other things that you might be able to swap in there.
One of the aspects of the game missing is the whole diplomacy UN thing, and I wonder if they're doing like they did with Civ 5 and leaving it for an expansion to rework and have it come in as a new concept or be recreated or, you know, remodeled in some other fashion.
Well, I mean, yeah, concept fine. Implementation in Civilization 5, I mean, there were some good things, but unfortunately there were just more bad things that really got in the way.
But I'm going to get this luxury band because I don't have it and the rest of you do. Well, let's have a funny question. It was the other one from Cool Lizzie earlier. But finally, and most importantly, if the North Pole were a city-state, what kind of city-state would it be, and what would its unique suzerain bonus be?
Huh? It's the season, I suppose.
There's no such thing as a happiness city-state, unfortunately. Maybe culture? Or production, I guess, because of all the elves. I don't know.
I got this. Here we go. If the North Pole were a city-state, yes, it would be a production city-state. What would its unique suzerain bonus be? District scaling cost.
Hey, you get your Christmas present.
Wow.
There you go.
Okay.
Or it's unique and it's the only production city-state that gives you a happiness bonus. Yeah, all the presents?
Some suzerain bonuses. I can't think of the city-state name right now. Something to do with amenities. Plus, there's something in there that I can't quite remember that actually does contribute to that. But maybe what you could have is you could have, setting aside the lull thing for the suzerain bonus, have the North Pole be a production-based city-state, and the suzerain bonus be a production booster towards buildings within any districts that you already have.
Hmm.
Like a +1 or a +2. I think that could work.
Wouldn't it be more fitting with the production theme?
Yes, yes. I mean, certainly the culture, I get that as well, but I like the production-based one simply because it'd be a production something that you can't get from another city-state. It's not based on wonders. It's not based on units. Yes, there are buildings within the game, but this would be specifically for those buildings inside the district. There we go. Candace Albin is helping us. Yes, Zanzibar's two unique luxuries. Buenos Aires does happy from bonus resources.
There you go. All right, so there's precedency.
Exactly. First 20th question, one of his other questions. What new mechanic would you all like to see added to the game? How would it benefit the game? That is a very difficult question to answer, mostly because most of my consideration is how can we improve the mechanics that are already in the game to being what they should be or even what they can be. If I was going to choose a new mechanic being added to the game, although it had its issues, it would be nice to have something analogous in the later game to corporations that we had in Civilization IV, but not the implementation of. And the only problem I
have... I was going to say, did you want Civ Sushi again?
No. I would like Civ Sushi again.
Well, I think we all would in some respects. And then the second question goes to even the more difficult part, which is how would it benefit the game? You might say, Dan, but commercial hubs are already so important. And I kind of don't want to either take away from that, which is, oh, I haven't been paying attention to commercial hubs. Now I can just do corporations and it'll do exactly what they do. Or I'm already really far ahead in commercial hubs and now I'm going to have corporations on top of it. But I would like to see them added to the game. And in terms of the benefit that it would give you, I wouldn't want it based on money, because I think the commercial hubs do that very well, plus the trade roads, etc. I would like to see the corporation more have to do with an added layer of diplomacy somehow tied into the agenda system, and maybe a little bit of overlap in espionage. If you remember from Call to Power series that had corporate executives in there, and I guess I know there were also executives from corporations in Civilization IV, but just some kind of added measure that you could have something going on, air quotes, the private sector. It's hard to put exactly what I want on it, but I just really like the idea in Civilization IV, and I think there can be a place for it in Civilization VI for the mechanics, but I do realize I'm kind of more the ideas guy on this right now than implementation. But the short answer being corporations, but don't have it tie to money. Have it tie to diplomacy / espionage in some way.
I would like to see the satellite layer brought over, because I thought that was a fun concept, and certainly in the modern era we have satellites and they can enhance communications, they can help entertainment, or your amenities, culture probably, as spying and espionage, you can help with that. There's definitely applications that it can be used for in the late game, and I think that would also make the late game a little bit more interesting too, is you'd have another thing that you could do in that era.
I hear giant satellite lasers! Pew pew!
Pew pew!
Yeah, Mackie's built.
Yeah, I'm struggling to come up with something easily, because it has to fit what's in the game already.
It's more like I think we want you to keep improving the existing ones or bring back other ones that worked before you try anything else new.
Yeah.
Why did my brain immediately go to, I want to troll this conversation, and Mac, you would like to see corruption return. So.
No, just wait. Not corruption.
And then Scott was talking about it the other day. He wants pollution back.
Yeah. Oh, there was a threat suggesting random events.
Oh, your favorite, Phil.
Concept isn't broken. The implementation of random events in Civ 4 was broken. And the difference between those two is the existence of strategy in dealing with them. It's the reason one is broken and not the other. You could have events that require you to plan in advance or to make investments so that you minimize the damage of random events and have those choices be meaningful. Very rarely in Civ 4 was it meaningful. Randomly lose your granary. Okay, well, now you rebuild your granary. Like, so how do I prevent losing my granary in the first place? Well, you can't. Okay, well, so what do I do differently in terms of strategy choices now that I lost my granary? Well, nothing really. Like, why are you bothering to put this in the game? It's just a nuisance. But that doesn't mean that you couldn't have events that could be pretty significant.
They do need to balance those events better if they ever brought them back. I thought some were better, like where you had to build a certain number of a building to get this bonus. So that was at least something you could work towards. And maybe if they made it beyond Earth, they tried to work that a little bit better. Like you would get something and it would trigger this event, and then you could work towards it. So something like that would be better and less completely random.
Yeah, Beyond Earth certainly had the beginnings of that.
All right, I think we've come to the final topic selection for each one of us here based on the feedback we received and also our timing. So, Scott, what is your final question choice? I mean, you could just ask the question that you asked.
Will gold ever be an electricity resource again in the game?
I don't know, either way. I don't care.
In one respect, I like that it's not strictly speaking on the map, simply because we talk about gold otherwise, because there's the gold income versus the gold resource itself. Will I ever think there will be an electricity resource in the game again? Yeah, because there's the modding community. Oh, you mean officially? Oh, probably. Oh,
well, they could add a precious metals resource, which would not necessarily exclusively be gold.
You have copper and mercury.
Mm-hmm.
So it just feels weird not to have gold. Like, why did they not put gold in there? I feel like there's a reason, and we just don't know what that reason is. And it could be that they're saving it, or I don't know.
Scott speculates that's the second DLC for Civ 6. Oh, well, I mean, that could be.
That could be. Here, you have gold resource. There you go. That's the third one.
I mean, it is true that Brave New World for Civilization 5 was initially part of a scenario, but then they added Bison.
Which Civ you would want to be in the game next one? I picked that one. Yeah, King Chris 20.
Well, if Lisa was still here, she'd ask you when the hell Korea is going to get in the game.
Yeah.
Which civilization would you like to see represented, I think, is what it really boils down to in that question.
Yeah, there's a couple. I think when I was arguing this before the game's release, it was reasonably obvious. I would like to see Mughals in the game, or at least some representation of India. I feel like the game actually could put multiple historical Indian civilizations in, considering how it's handled things in the past. Phoenicia would be my number two pick. There are civilizations we have some information on. They were pretty darn significant historically, and we have not seen them at all or in a very long time in any capacity in any of the previous Civ titles. So those would make it near the top of my list.
For me, I'd like to see some of the more ancient civs come back, like the Mayans or the Assyrians, or, you know, some other ancient civ that we haven't had yet. That would be really cool.
I don't think we know much about the Mayans in the ancient period, or what would qualify as ancient.
I know they're not exactly, they're not really ancient, but I forgot the ones that came before them.
Well, we've had Mayans past two civs, same with Inca.
I would love to see more, like, I'd have another one that's the First Nations or the Indians here from the U.S., but we don't know enough sometimes to properly represent them, and other times they've declined being represented even.
Yes.
So.
There are North American representatives you could pick that we have not historically put in Civ games.
I want to see more outside of Europe representation.
Yeah. The game is really Europe favored in terms of representation right now, but... that might not be true forever.
No, it would be good to see more out of either that or to see more out of Africa or even the... Well, Southeast Asia's been doing pretty well, actually.
Yeah, although you can go a different route depending on what time period you're talking about and who you want to represent there.
Hell, Brunei or something like that. You know, something you don't normally
any
see.
Any of those nations that had their own histories, and some of them were pretty impressive in terms of land area and population, at least more so than Civs that have already made it in the game. So you can include nations like that, or you can include nations like Majorai or Marathi. You could do that. You could put Bengal in there. Bengal is pretty big for a while. You could make a case for a lot of nations, potentially, especially if you don't have some sort of fixed inclusion criteria. Oh, the other one, I didn't say it, but I think it should just be added as a matter of course, is Mongolia. Come on now.
Oh, yes. I was going to get to that, too. Where's Genghis?
Yeah,
it feels weird not to have Genghis around. I know we have Scythia, which is awesome, but Genghis too. We need more hordes, right?
Scythia is cool, and a Central Asian rep from earlier in history is appreciated. But yeah, I mean, that was the largest contiguous nation in history, and its influence, not just during its height, but after its height, was enormous on many regions of the world. It directly influenced the progression of military tech. It directly influenced how trade was handled between the East and West. It just feels weird not having them.
It feels weird not having Shaka, too. We have to wait for him, I guess.
Nagash says in the chat, I'm worried Genghis won't be the leader since he's a great general. I need Genghis, though. Well, I mean, they've gone and renamed, I think about Civilization V, they've renamed city-states after bringing in, for example, Korea into the game. So I'm pretty sure if they can rename an entire city-state, they could rename a great general.
But that means you can have Kublai Khan now for your great general.
There you go.
Or you can make him the leader. Or you can make one of the other Mongol leaders lead the Mongols. You don't have to make a Genghis Khan. They had other rulers while their empire was still very large. So you could definitely mix that up there still.
Holy Roman Empire. No, joking. I would like to see...
other than Canada, what's Dan want?
I actually wasn't going to say Canada, surprisingly, to some, but I've actually maintained that before. I would just like to see, not a specific Civ, but speaking of worldwide representation, just better representation in Africa.
Tori's question. I like this thought. Giving all the city-states ancient walls at the beginning helps the game. Yes, I am so tired of the AI coming in and eating up the city-states I've been trading with.
Because then conquer the city-states yourself.
No, that's not what you do. They're useful not being part of your empire.
Then conquer the AI yourself. And then conquer the less useful city-states yourself after you body the AI.
Conquering the AI is usually in my plan, but when city-states are in between us and they go there first, probably on the way to say surprise hi to me, if the city-states had the walls, that would help.
Oh, my
gosh. It's not huge.
I really am opposed to anything that makes the ability to defend yourself in the early game more free. That needs to not be there. I guess with city-states, you can make a case just to make it harder, I guess. But I don't like seeing... free defense. I feel like investing in your civilization's survival is something that should definitely be part of the game for both the dual purpose of having to evaluate how much you need to survive, and because getting conquered historically was a thing, and it was a very big thing as to why civilizations did not stand the test of time, is because they got smacked by Rome or some such. So you have to invest in military to some degree that is variable depending on your situation. I mean, on higher difficulties, yes, the AI will attack the city-states. Very often you should, too. If they added walls, the game would be different. I'm not sure if it would be significantly better or worse for such a change.
Rather than giving city-states ancient walls at the beginning of the game, just have it be a higher priority for AIs to do that, and or give them a discount towards constructing it as compared to you as a human player or other AI. And then there's still a choice maybe that they would have to make in that regard, rather than it just being automatically given to them.
Or maybe they should just, like, actually make units to defend themselves. That'd be nice, too. They're easier to take down in an AI by a margin, usually. I've mostly only played on Deity in single player, and the city-states do seem to be easier to kill on average than the AI. And part of that's due to the AI starting bonuses, of course, but the city-states just don't build a lot of units, and so they get surrounded and pounded too easily.
What game are you playing? Because that's not my experience at all. They're tougher to take down than the AI. They have plenty of units if they're not being hassled by the other civs or whatever, but I've seen them have plenty of units, and usually their defense goes a lot higher than the AI's does.
I don't know, man. I kill, like, two or three city-states with three archers and a warrior or two pretty often on Deity, where they have the most bonuses. So
on Civ 6?
On Civ 6, yes. And that's easier for me to accomplish than killing most of the AI like that, although I can kill the AI like that as well. And I usually will if they're close enough. City-states are like a secondary target for me if I can't just rush out an AI.
I do find that certainly anecdotally, city-states are more prone to being wiped out in Civilization VI and Civilization V, which I think kind of gets to where this question is coming from. And that's often happening when you get the notification an unmet player has been defeated. Almost always that unmet player is not an AI proper. That is a city-state, and that's a city-state you've never met and you never will meet.
Unless you liberate them. I feel like when you're suzerain of a city-state, that should be a more viable relationship. That's a mechanic that could be expanded on. Have, like, a completely cost-free declaration if an AI is at war with your city-state, or even consider dragging a player into the war outright if a city-state they are suzerain of gets targeted. The other nice thing would be you don't lose your envoys with a city-state that you liberate. That would really balance this quite a bit better in terms of AI or human player conquering them. Because then if somebody's suzerain of them, they actually have to act like it and protect them because they will be at war as well. And you get some benefit for liberating them that you do not get otherwise as their suzerain.
I'm not going to be able to deliver on this exactly because it's too specific. White Russian, how about you all sing us a nice Christmas song, grin face, and in brackets, sorry, Mackie.
Mackie, make him stop.
No singing.
I specifically glossed over that one when I was scrolling for questions. I was like, that's not happening.
Nope.
I mean, Timothy 001 said maybe a duet with Mad Jin. I don't.
I can't stop here right now. It has to wait.
All of us singing you a nice Christmas song, that's not going to happen. And why did you have to put nice in front of there?
I can tell you what would happen. It would be wildly out of tune.
Yeah, it wouldn't be good.
I can sing on tune. I don't have the range that people who are actually good at singing have, but I can sing on tune.
I'd do much better if there was actually music playing. But what you can do, I'm not going to sing it. I thought about singing this. What I'm going to do instead is I'm going to speak it, and then if one of our fans out there wants to, like, auto-tune it and then actually set it to the music, that would be amazing. But here you go. Have a holly jolly Christmas, and in case you didn't hear, there will be more singing on Polycast next year.
Sing off confirmed. This thing off has to happen.
Call in today.
In North America, 301-637-7659.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
Log on to the series' official website at
thepolycast.net.
Support the ongoing Polycast Patreon campaign.
Collective achievements.
Personal incentives.
Month-to-month commitment.
For more information, visit thepolycast.net/Patreon.
I couldn't resist saying personal incentives that way.
And I don't care how many takes you make me take. You know, I'm not changing it.
Speaking of off, no, we're not talking about our clothes. Maggie.
Well, this has been the 2016 Polycast Christmas special. With us as usual, Dan Q.
I am not Scrooge.
Phil?
Now officially pronounced by Dank Dan as a good boy.
What even? I don't. Guessing with... Aye.
He called us good boys.
Yeah, good boys and girls. He's also referring to the audience there.
Yep. It's okay. Also, it's confirmed. Thanks, Dan. Confirmed it.
And also joining us today, Alphashard.
Merry Christmas and have a happy new year.
Lisa was also with us earlier, and I'm sure she'd say the same thing. And I am, as usual, I'm Makalua, and we'll all see you again in 2017.
Happy holidays.
Ho.
So I'll just do, like, blatantly false things about Civ 6, and then, like, you guys just don't correct me. No complaints.
I'm sorry, open what?
No complaints.
Oh, no complaints. Okay, that's how my brain processes.
Well, it's not open complaining season again.
My brain processed that as open pants. I don't know why. I just...
What?
You just heard my voice and couldn't help it, like, I guess.
No, that would be in spite of.
Stay out in the snow outside. You need to cool down.
Yeah, go get in the snow. You never hate it there.
There's no snow where I live.
Yeah, I know.
Well, yeah, or, I know.
Go to your freezer.
Yeah, go stick your head in the freezer for 10 minutes.
But I have so many bodies in there already. I mean...
Well, you'll just add to the collection, duh.
I want to add myself to the collection, silly.
Temporarily, Phil.
It's just
temporarily.
Silly. This is silly.
Did someone in your physical presence have something they wanted to add there, Lisa?
A lot of people want to contribute to Polycast, but I'm not letting them.
That's awesome.
Lisa's like, yeah, you guys have to pay your dues too, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I used to get up early in the morning at every Saturday. And
yeah, maybe even before some of our listeners were born. No, probably not yet.
Not yet, but at some point, Dan.
That's the right point. All right, so we will go back to you then, Scott. What is next? Scott? Uh-oh. It's the mute button won. Oh, I hate when the mute button wins.
We've reached a conclusion.
Oh, I hear, okay. Yeah, I hear the background
that's
noise.
That's gotta be Scott.
Yeah, that's Scott. I hear the background noise, but I don't hear Scott.
I'm sorry, I'm here.
Oh, there you go. What's our next topic? Since Lisa isn't here for the next topic, we'll just have to eliminate her in rotation, just out of necessity.
Let's see, pick something.
Scott?
Hold on.
I mean, this is what happens at a live show. And I understand when something is happening in real life, that does have to take priority over what's going on in the digital world, because it's easier to ignore people in the digital world than it is in the real world. That was great timing, though. That was perfect.
What kind of city-state would it be? What about a secret Santa? I mean, how do you do that in Civ? Which is Victoria's question. I mean, no, we're not doing a musical question, Dan.
I see what you're
trying to do.
Honestly, I thought Victoria meant, how about secret Santa on the panel? That was interesting, my
interpretation. Oh.
Not in the game, but that would have required a little bit more planning. Date December 10th, 2016. Music
by Kevin MacLeod. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.